Welcome, everybody, to the BOTC podcast. This is Ty Berger, TB, your host, your blog manager, your fearless and benevolent leader. I'm joined today for a special podcast by our own Ahern Alley from Bring on the Cats, and we are joined by ESPN's Big 12 blogger, David Ubben. So I'm going to turn it over to those two, and they will take it away, and I will hopefully not sound too stupid the rest of the night.
No worries, man. POD sets everything just right. I'm ready to go. I'm fired up.
I bet you're bouncing off the walls.
No, that's he was stank or someone.
All right. David, welcome. Thanks for joining us. First of all, I'm going to put you on the spot right away. Would you like to publicly apologize for picking PSA to lose by two touchdowns the last 2 weeks?
Here's the deal. I really, really felt pretty good about that pick. I felt pretty confident about that pick. But hey, you know, I was wrong. I'm on board with K-State now, however much pushback I get from K-State, but we'll see. I'll bust out a spoiler alert. I picked K-State to win this weekend.
See, now, and that's my problem right now, David. I think you're just trolling us. I think you're going for the reverse jinx and pulling this crap right now just because you're going for a Mizzou win here.
you're deep inside my head. You've got me. No, but... Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think what you have is a K-State team that obviously is, looking probably more like a 7-8 win team, and a Missouri team that's a little bit not quite as good as I think we thought they might be heading into the season. I think they're both going to be ending up in pretty similar spots at season's end. And, K-State, I mean, their offense is moving the ball. Defensively, they obviously are so much better than I think anybody even really thought they might be coming into this year. And so... You know, they're just kind of riding that, but I think for now you're going to see them in the top 25 for a while.
Yeah, and let's delve into that a little bit, why these teams aren't really on par with expectations. Let's start with K-State and the defense. I mean, it's not just Arthur Brown who's made this team that much better, is it?
No, I mean, you look at what, obviously, David Garrett, I mean, he's progressed as you might expect. And then obviously the addition of Nigel Malone has been good. Ty Zimmerman's played really well. But you look up front, I mean, it's night and day. You know, not only with what Arthur Brown has brought, but you look on the defensive line, I mean, you're talking about a unit that got dominated. I mean, I think about, and the only time I got to see K-State in person last year was against Nebraska, and that was ugly. But, you know, you look at what, Meshack Williams has done and Jordan Volker, those guys have really played well. And, I mean, for as good as Prizel Brown was last year, those guys have been significantly better. And that's a big deal. If you can win the line of scrimmage, which K-State's done, you're going to be in good shape.
And really, ugly is a kind way to describe that.
I was going
to
say, that's about the minimum you could say for that game.
conservative offensive game plan I think I've ever seen a coach ever. It was, oh my gosh. Carson Kaufman, I think his longest play or his longest throw the first half before they got out was about 2 yards on a little hitch to the flat to Mr. Daniel Thomas.
We were clearly horrified of that Nebraska defense.
As well, you should have been.
Fair enough.
How that game went, the rest of the season did for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
And today, when you had a blog, you said Arthur Brown's your number one pick for Defensive Player of the Year right now.
I do. I think you have to kind of look at one, what they're able to do as individuals, but two, what they're able to do in kind of galvanizing an entire defense. And I think it's pretty obvious. If you had to pick out one reason, why this defense is so much better, I mean, Arthur Brown flying around, that's a huge reason to me. I mean, how do you guys feel? I mean, what do you feel like is the biggest reason why this defense is so much better?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's him and that team speed. And up front, definitely, Meshack Williams and Jordan Volker are doing a great job of actually getting a little bit of a pass rush, which is something we didn't see much last year. And the rush defense is just night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the difference in team speed on defense this year is impressive, to say the least. I mean, you're talking about the difference from playing Alex Rebeck and maybe Jarrell Childs at linebacker to going with three linebackers with Arthur Brown, Trey Walker, and Emmanuel Lemieux. Those three guys are so much faster than what we've had at linebacker in the last few years. And, as you mentioned, on the defensive line, we've got more speed. We've got pretty decent speed in the secondary. you know, some of the tackling is not always what I'd like to see, but they at least get there.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, if I had to pick one play from this year to show people, I think it would be the play where Arthur Brown chased down Robert Griffin for that sack. Because that, it was like Griffin, you know, he's like, I never get caught on that play. What just happened?
Yeah, you could definitely tell that he thought he had the angle on Brown there. That play will probably be part of film study here in the next couple of days.
But it's like, that's the thing, in the Big 12, it's pretty obvious. You have to have linebackers that can cover in space and come and have and offer some pressure on delayed blitzes or even find some holes on you know, full-time bring-the-house blitzes. And then Brown's obviously brought that. It's if you don't have that, you're going to have so much trouble. Your linebackers have to be able to do everything in this league. And that's why, you know, converting guys like Lemire or bringing up a safety, you just have to do that in this league.
Absolutely.
And then this weekend, I mean, the defense is going to face a different challenge. Missouri will spread the field and make K-State cover, which has maybe kind of been a weakness last weekend, especially. Do you think the secondary is going to handle that, David?
I think so. I'm still not entirely sold on James Franklin as a week-to-week passer. I mean, he's made some pretty fantastic throws. But you're still talking about a first-year starter. You're still talking about a guy that has obvious mechanical issues. And you're talking about a Missouri offense that doesn't have guys that you can feel comfortable stretching the field. You know, Marcus Lucas and, you know, Rolandis Woodland have been able to have that and get open downfield. But in terms of making plays and having a quarterback that can get it there, you know, I'm not fully sold on what James Franklin offers them. So the test, I think, for K-State is more so up front and not allowing him to run. I mean, you look at him, this is a guy that racked up almost 400 yards of offense against OU, 100 yards on the ground. K-State has to slow that down. I think K-State's off-guard defense is pretty similar to what OU is bringing. And if they can, you know, have a better performance, I think they're going to be a team that leaves Saturday happy.
And Henry Josey, I mean, he was, what, a fourth-string running back? And he looks like he's for real.
Yeah, I'm definitely sold on Josey. You know, he started the year, I think he was third string behind Kendall Lawrence and Devin Moore, but it was third string. But it was pretty obvious that those three guys were all going to get touches. I mean, he was a guy that was probably going to get 7, 8, 10 touches a game, and now that obviously is up to about 25. And we'll see how healthy Moore and Lawrence are. Those guys might come back this week, maybe not. I'm not sure it makes a huge difference. I mean, Josey kind of does give you that. I don't know if I'd say a home run hitter, but a more explosive back that's going to hit the hole and catch those balls in the flat and really make linebackers wrap him up and not let him break out of those tackles and get into the open field. Because when he does get in the open field, he can be dangerous. I mean, we saw him make so many plays against Arizona State. And again, he played really well against OU as well. So we'll see what he has to offer. I think regardless of whether or not Devin Moore is and Kendall Lawrence are back, you're still going to see Henry Josey be their featured back, and he's definitely up to the task.
Okay. And I think Ty's going to agree, we're just going to skip right over special teams. We don't like talking.
Yes, please.
Anthony Cantelli, Big 12 special teams player of the week.
That's true.
In a game where he missed two field goals.
But he made three field goals.
You're right. And credit where credit's due. He made the one that counted late in the game. So I don't really want to dog on Cantelli when Sean Snyder is really the target of my wrath. But
anyway, so the offense, I mean, obviously Colin Klein's the focal point. I guess two questions on him. Let's start with his passing. Can he be a consistently accurate passer and throw downfield?
No, I don't believe in him as a passer at all. I mean, it was just so jarring last week to watch Robert Griffin's passes versus Colin Klein's passes. I mean, it was night and day. Can he do well enough for K-State to succeed and get into the postseason? I think so. But as far as, can he be a guy that you drop back and consistently make plays, throwing the ball 20, 25 times a game? I don't think that's the kind of quarterback that you are. But at the same time, I think, Bill Snyder realizes that too, and it's pretty obvious early in the season that he is not going to make him do that. He's going to, obviously emphasize his strengths and give him the ball. And I was looking this up today. I'm writing a little bit about it tomorrow. But are you guys aware that Colin Klein is currently the Big 12 leader in carries with 91? He's got more carries than anyone else in the entire Big 12.
Not surprised. I posted that not too long ago. He was averaging, I think it's 22, 23 carries a game, and whether or not that was sustainable.
I think
it is.
I think you're testing fate a little bit with that. In terms of what he has to offer, I mean, obviously he's a bigger guy. But, I mean, do you guys feel like, you know, the guys behind him, whether it be Tuggle or Lemire, I mean, do you think they can offer the same type of things with their legs?
I don't know about Ty. I mean, we've seen so little of those guys. I mean, we've heard that maybe they could, but I just don't know.
I think athletically, both Justin Tuggle and Daniel Sams at least measure up to Colin Klein running the ball. Now, the question is their decision-making and their confidence to the point where they can read and react and make plays that they're supposed to make running the ball? Or are they still hesitant? Are they still tentative? Are they still not sure what they're doing? And then because of that, they don't make plays that athletically they otherwise should be able to make. Throwing the ball, I think you're looking at a disaster. I mean, Colin Klein is good enough for the K-State offense. He can deliver a nice ball sometimes. He's not consistent with his accuracy. He really stares down receivers, but from what I've seen, from very little I've seen out of Tuggle, he's a lot better than Tuggle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or not, was it Tuggle? Did I, yes, Lemire, sorry. Wasn't it Sam Lemire that played against Kent State?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I meant to say Lemire. And I don't think we've seen anything out of Tuggle.
No. I mean, Ivan, if you're Missouri, did you just load the box the whole game and dare Colin Klein to throw the ball?
I think it depends on how much confidence you have in your corners. I mean, they've been kind of up and down all year. I mean, obviously, Missouri's played some really tough teams, but you look at what Brock Osweiler was able to do for them against, when they played Arizona State. That's got to scare you a little bit. You look at, obviously, Landry Jones. I mean, Ryan Burroughs had a huge day against them. And so, you know, if you're coming down to it, I think that may be your best chance to try and slow this down. You have to obviously slow the zone read game. If they've got that going, I mean, K-State had that going last year. I mean, they moved the ball really well against Missouri and Columbia. And if you let that go again, I'm not sure Missouri has the offensive firepower to outscore, K-State in a game like this. You got to slow it down and do what you can to make sure they don't have it. So, yeah, I think stacking the box, I mean, that seems reasonable to me. And, you know, but then again, you know, with the corners and the inexperience that they've got, I mean, it doesn't sound like Kip Edwards and E.J. Gaines, those guys are nearly as good as Missouri seemed to think they were going to be coming into the season. So you're risking it a little bit, but, you know, if there's one quarterback in the league that, you know, you want to test and make sure that he's the guy that has to beat you deep, I think Klein's pretty high on the list.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, what about the – it is playing at the Family Stadium. What do you think is going to – is that going to be a big advantage?
I think so. I mean, the crowd at that stadium is incredibly underrated. You know, in the vast scope of college football, I don't think it gets anywhere near as much respect. I mean, it can get pretty crazy in there. I mean, Nebraska last year was obviously, you know, one of the better atmospheres that they've seen there in a while. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I think, you know, if you're Missouri, you know, let's not forget this is still a Missouri team that 2 weeks ago was in Norman, Oklahoma, and 3 weeks ago was, you know, playing at one of the most anticipated games at Arizona State's history, you know, a blackout, a huge environment for them. You know, Mr. James Harden rocking on the sidelines, beard intact. And so I don't know if it's going to intimidate them, but it'll be definitely difficult to play in. But I think for Missouri, it's at this point kind of just another week.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Ty, you said you were looking at some stats earlier. I mean, you have anything you want to throw in there?
Not really. I mean, going back to your point a minute ago about what does Missouri do on defense, I mean, you obviously want to, you know, you want to try and take away the other team's strength as much as you can. And obviously for K-State, that's running the ball. But I'm just looking at the pass efficiency defense stats, and Missouri's 99th in the country in pass efficiency defense right now. And, you know, like I said, Colin Klein's not the most consistent guy. He's not the most accurate guy, but I think you got to be awfully careful if you're Mizzou, because if you put your corners out on an island against Chris Harper, you know, even Broderick Smith, who hasn't made a lot of plays this year, we saw last year he can make some plays. A lot of his problem this year has been that Klein is not very good at going through his progressions and finding his second option or, you know, second or third option. If they get out there, two big guys and Chris Harper and Broderick Smith matched up against smaller cornerbacks, and they can get loose. You know, it only takes one for a big play. So it's a tough call when you're Missouri and your pass defense is that suspect. If you had, you know, the cornerbacks and safeties that Nebraska's had the last couple of years, you might feel a lot more confident doing that. But again, you got to kind of pick your poison.
Yeah, a little bit. I think to some degree, and I think those numbers, you know, with the quarterbacks that they face between Osweiler and Landry, you know, I don't know that they're necessarily that bad, but they definitely are guys that you can't feel too confident in.
That's true. That's a good point, because at this point in the season, most teams have played at most one solid passing team. You know, mm-hmm. most teams have played, you know, three games that range between body bags and cupcakes, and maybe one good team. Missouri's played two legitimately good passing teams so far. Mm-hmm. So it's I definitely can see the point that their stats are skewed downward right now because of that.
All right, so David, you know, you talk about this game. Let's look forward a little bit. You know, we don't want the players and coaches to do that, but we can as fans. You know, Kansas State wins this. All of a sudden, you got Tech and Kansas, and then a showdown with Oklahoma. Could K-State be 7-0 head into that game?
Yeah, that definitely is a possibility. I mean, Tech, I think we're going to learn a whole lot about them this weekend, because we just learned so little about them in the first month of the season. We learned that they're not going to blow a ton of teams out. So Tech, there's obvious concerns. The 20-0 deficit against Kansas, the 10-9 halftime deficit against Texas State, coached by none other than Mr. Dennis Franchione. And so there's obvious concerns there. I think I think Tech is better than that, but we'll see just how good they are, I think, this weekend against A&M. Because anytime A&M does this, you know, I'm always brought back to what Mike Sherman said, you know, last year. I think we can all agree that Texas A&M is a better team than number 24 in the country. Just because you lose these games, it doesn't fundamentally change who you are. This is still a team with tons of senior leadership and tons of talent. Maybe they're up there with just about anybody in the Big 12 when it comes to talent. The problem is, obviously, they played one of the worst third quarters I've seen against A&M or against Oklahoma State, and then a really, really bad second half against Arkansas. So there's some, you know, focus and execution issues, but the talent level's there, and this team, if they can put it together for 60 minutes, I mean, they're as good as just about anybody in the country. And so it'll be a good test for Tech, and then we'll see. But K-State, I mean, if you can get past Missouri at this point, I would say the trend is definitely skewing toward being 7-0 going in to face OU.
So that looks pretty good there. Maybe the biggest disappointment for this year, I think, for K-State football has got to be Bryce Brown. There were some reports today, I don't know if you saw this, about him maybe thinking about going to the NFL. That's mm-hmm. tricky, isn't it?
I mean, I can't say that I'm that surprised, honestly. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on with Bryce. I don't know the guy at all. I've never spoken with him. I've talked to Arthur a couple times, but I don't know Bryce, you know, really at all. So, you know, I won't venture a guess as to what's going on there. But this is obviously, you know, a guy who's kind of let off-the-field stuff, you know, affect him before. And it wouldn't surprise me if he just doesn't want to deal with it and just wants to go back to kind of working out and being in his own world for 6 months before the NFL draft.
Did you ever talk to Arthur about Bryce at all?
A little bit, but not really about anything like that or what happened to Tennessee. They're not real big on talking about that. I just kind of want to talk to him about what kind of a player he was. So, you know, I don't know how much insight I can offer on that, but it's not a good situation.
Okay. And so, let's see, I'm trying to think back. This week's power rankings, you had K-State at number 4, is that right?
That's correct. Number 4, up from number 9 2 weeks ago, and number 10 3 weeks ago.
You're so trolling us.
So, it's half of my job, I
think. So, I mean, does that mean you think that's where they are right now, or that's where they're going to end up? Is there a difference between those two things?
Well, it's definitely how they're playing right now. I mean, I think Missouri is better than the number 8 team in the country, and I think or in the number 8 team in the conference. I think Texas A&M is better. I think I had them at number 7 this week, or number 6. But I think that's, you know, obviously kind of where they're playing right now. I think Kansas State is still somewhere in the middle of the league, but they've kind of sold me as being a bowl team. I think Kansas State looks like a fringe top 25 team to me. I think they'll end up winning, you know, 7 or 8 games. Obviously, when they start playing those Big 12 South teams with their, you know, real powers, I don't know how much success they'll have there.
What's the Big 12 South?
Yeah, the former Big 12 South teams. So we'll kind of see what they have to offer. I think Texas. I mean, I think Kansas State, probably a team in the middle of the Big 12, somewhere from 5th to 7th.
Okay. And I guess I know this is a K-State podcast, but we better talk about the game that you're going to, Texas and Oklahoma. What do you think's going to happen there?
I picked Oklahoma to win that by 3 points. I think it's going to be really close. I, I'm not fully sold on Texas, but I'm pretty sold on them. I mean, their defense is just as good as it always is. And offensively, they learned how to operate within themselves, not do too much. I mean, ever since Garrett Gilbert melted down against BYU early, I mean, he had a banged-up shoulder while he was doing it. But this team, Case McCoy and David Ash, neither one of those guys has thrown a pick yet. And they've been extremely efficient. Brian Harsin is keeping those guys and making sure that they're able to do what they can do. They're kind of opening things up for Malcolm Brown as well. They're just so young. But Harsin has been a master this year of just carefully kind of bringing these guys in, introducing more and more stuff each week. And this should be a fun one against OU because this is the game that, obviously, for OU and for Texas, and all the gloves come off, you're going to see everything these guys have in their playbook, and it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Well, fortunately for us, we don't really have to worry about how good Texas is, right, Ty?
That's right. I mean, we own them no matter what happens. So I know that when I go down to Austin in November to watch that game, I mean, I know I'm going to walk out of that stadium, you know, with my team having won.
Yeah. So I guess let's go back real quick. I feel like we neglected John Hubert. You know, I think we all kind of agree he's not an elite level back, but he seems to be what we have right now. I mean, what's the ceiling for him this year?
I don't know. I mean, he could get to 1,000 yards this season. I could see that happening. K-State just relies so much on the run, and Colin Klein attracts so much attention. I could totally see him hitting 1,000 yards.
And maybe the least impressive 1,000 yards in the league.
Maybe something like that.
The thing with Hubert is right now, I mean, I think you're seeing his ceiling right now. I mean, he does okay. He does the right things, except for when he whiffs on a block and Klein gets hit with the crown of the helmet right to the face mask by a linebacker. But, you know, he pretty much does everything they ask for him. No, he's not especially fast. No, he's not especially shifty. And damn sure he's not going to run anybody over, but he's doing okay. I mean, he's serviceable.
And then I guess the other thing we should mention is on your blog, Midseason Awards, whatever you want to call it, you also put Bill Snyder up as Coach of the Year. So absolutely. Just what you've seen.
You know, I think for more than anything, you know, the Coach of the Year may be a little bit of an unfair award, but I think for better or worse, it's overachieving and doing the most with the talent that you have. And you look at what K-State has. There's not a ton of raw talent on this team. You know, they're just getting the job done. You know, I don't know if we know exactly how, you know, how many teams a guy like Nigel Malone will be starting for on this league. Maybe more than we thought. Well, that we'll learn that as the season goes along. There's just not a ton of raw talent on this team, but they're outplaying teams. They're getting it done. The defense is better. The offense is doing what it can do to win games, and they're 4-0. Which I don't know if a lot of people expected them to be at this spot. You know, obviously double-digit underdogs at Miami. I thought that game would be close, but I didn't give them a chance to beat Baylor. I didn't think they had the offensive firepower to keep up with Baylor. They did that, and now they've got, you know, a really good Missouri team coming to town, and they can really open some eyes this week if they do that.
Well, I will point out in our blog preseason predictions, I did have K-State 4-0 at this point.
you were a lot more optimistic than I was, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, though, I wouldn't have picked him to beat Baylor after week one, probably.
No, I don't think anybody would.
That's the thing. I've been sold on Baylor, like, since the end of last season. I really was really sold on this team. And I couldn't pick them to beat TCU because I thought TCU was kind of a top-10 team. But it looks like both of them still not quite who you thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess not. Well, I don't know, Ty, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
I really don't. Actually, you mentioned the Red River Shootout earlier. David, I have just kind of a fan question for you. Have you been to that game before?
I have. This is my fourth time at the game.
Okay. All right. Well, see, I used to live in Texas, and I used to just hear ridiculous stories from my friends who went to UT and wherever about that weekend. Is it as crazy as we hear?
Yes, it is. So there's a million things that are awesome about this weekend, but one of my favorites is OU fans will tailgate a sports bar in Dallas. They will set up shop at this sports bar, which I will remain unnamed, but they go there, and that's like their unofficial like hangout for the whole weekend.
So it's like Kelly's in Westport for Iowa State fans.
Something like that. And so they all kind of go out there and just kind of hang out. And but yeah, once you get in the fair, I mean, for a 2:30 game before the fair gets, it's just crammed. It's crazy, and then after the game, people still. I mean, it's you know, they mix in at the 50-yard line during the game, and then they go to the fair after it, and it's the nighttime at the fair after the OU-Texas game is not a place that I tend to frequent.
It's at 11 this year. I think your colleague, Pat Forty, like said, that was just an awful decision for the game.
Well, they refuse to play the game at night for some of the same reasons why I mentioned earlier. They're not going to play that game at night. And so it's kind of left up to the TV network. So you can't just say, you know, we're going to have this game at 2:30 and you guys can televise it or not. If you're going to limit them and say we can't play it at night, you know, you kind of have to be at the TV's, the TV network's mercy a little bit. And so, you know, it's not ideal, and I mean, the complaints are legitimate, but it's going to be a good game regardless.
I got to say, I think that if they played that game at night, I think you'd have 10 people dead by the end of the night.
That very well could be the case.
And David, you said something about earlier this week about being downwind of the corn dogs. How close are you?
I live about a mile from the fairgrounds. Pretty close to downtown.
Okay. There you go.
That's nice. Cool. Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. Ty, you want to close us out?
Sure thing. Well, thank you again for joining us. Again, we have David Ubben from ESPN's Big 12 blog. Read, obey. He's on board with the Cats, even if he is just reverse jinxing and trolling like crazy. He's like Spencer Hall from EDSBS last week, trying to troll Alabama. Although he claimed that was serious, he probably was actually being serious.
At this point, I don't see how K-State doesn't go 11-0.
I don't either. It would be the mystery of the world if we didn't win out at this point. So, anyway, David, thanks again for joining us. This has been the BOTC podcast. Thanks, Ahern. Thanks, David. And we will catch you soon.
All right. Sounds good. See you guys. Thanks again. The masses, from Madrid to Calabasas, he's got a mate. Who the devil's in Tokyo? Don't leave that one, because I'll be putting it work. Commit my life to reverse. Well, respect it, because that's my hope.